State workers who want to take time off to care for children or sick relatives have won a majority victory at the Supreme Court. In another case yesterday, the court made it more difficult to sue police for interrogating severely wounded suspects while they wait for medical treatment. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
10 years ago, Congress enacted the Family and Medical Leave Act, mandating up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave for workers who need time off to care for children or sick family members. The law applied to private industry and to state employees. Within a few years of its enactment, though, the key enforcement provision authorizing money damage suits against violators fell under a cloud of constitutional doubt as it applied to state employees. A variety of Supreme Court decisions deferring to states' rights struck down similar provisions in other federal laws, namely the laws banning discrimination against older or disabled employees. Thus, the stage was set for another states' rights challenge. The test case came from Nevada, where a social worker named William Hibbs sought the unpaid leave mandated by the federal law so that he could care for his wife, who'd been gravely injured in an automobile accident. The leave was initially approved by his boss, but subsequently revoked by a new boss, Mr. Hibbs.
I said, "You can't do this. I already have my time approved." She goes, "We can do anything we want. You can't sue us. We're the state."
Indeed, in recent years, the Supreme Court has ruled that states are immune from damage suits, even if they discriminate on the basis of disability or age. And the state was counting on the High Court to continue down the same constitutional road. Instead, yesterday, the court put the brakes on its states' rights jurisprudence. The vote was an unexpected 6-3. Even more surprising, the majority opinion was written by the man who pioneered much of the Supreme Court's modern states' rights doctrine, Chief Justice William Rehnquist. Basically, he said that sex and race discrimination are different under the Constitution from other kinds of discrimination, and that in this case, where there's a long history of gender stereotypes, Congress has the power to authorize damage suits against the states. The Family and Medical Leave Act, wrote the Chief Justice, is narrowly targeted at the fault line between work and family, precisely where sex-based stereotypes have been the strongest, stereotypes that characterize women as the caretakers and men as the breadwinners. Indeed, said Rehnquist, until the Family and Medical Leave Law was enacted, most states did not provide leave for family emergencies, and when they did, states often provided it more generously to women, which meant in turn that it was cheaper to hire men. By providing an across-the-board leave mandate for men and women, said Rehnquist, Congress reduced the incentive for discriminating against women in hiring and promotion. In short, it leveled the playing field. Judith Lichtman is head of the National Partnership for Women and Families, the group that spearheaded the drive for the federal law. She notes that in the 10 years since the act passed, 42% of the 35 million Americans who've used its provisions have, in fact, been men, men like Mr. Hibbs.
What Justice Rehnquist did in this opinion is that he soundly rejected the stereotypes that cheat men out of family time and cheat women out of jobs.
Georgetown Law Professor Victoria Jackson, who specializes in federal-state power questions, called yesterday's Supreme Court ruling a stunning development.
This case does suggest that the court is not going to simply keep extending and extending its willingness to strike down laws of Congress that are designed to prevent discrimination. And the court is very explicit in this opinion in saying that gender discrimination is very different, in its view, from discrimination based on age or based on disability, and is, in some respects, more like discrimination based on race.
Dissenting from yesterday's ruling were Justices Kennedy, Scalia, and Thomas. They said the Family and Medical Leave Act was an entitlement program, not an anti-discrimination law, and that evidence of discrimination by the states was not enough to justify opening state treasuries to damage suits. The court's second important decision yesterday involved police misconduct in questioning a gravely wounded suspect who was not advised of his rights but never charged with a crime. The case began 5 years ago when police stopped a man they suspected, wrongly it turned out, of selling drugs. When they heard a squeaky bicycle in the dark, they shouted at the rider to stop. 29-year-old Oliviero Martinez stopped and put his hands over his head, but when police found a knife on him, he tried to run. A struggle ensued, and Martinez was shot 5 times, once through the eye, blinding him, once in the spine, eventually paralyzing him, and three more times in the legs. After the shooting, Police Sergeant Ben Chavez arrived on the scene and climbed into the ambulance with a tape recorder in hand. In the ambulance, and again later at the hospital, he questioned Martinez about what happened. He did not advise him of his Miranda rights. And although medical personnel can be heard at the hospital telling the policeman to leave, he did not stop the questioning. Martinez repeatedly refused to answer the question, saying he was dying and would not answer until he got treatment. The grisly scene, the agonized suspect, the patient policeman, the hospital chaos, is all captured on tape.
Mire, dígame qué pasó.
Martinez, who was never charged, subsequently sued the Oxnard, California Police Department for allegedly violating his constitutional right not to incriminate himself and for coercing him in violation of the Constitution. Yesterday, the Supreme Court, in an opinion written by Justice Clarence Thomas, said that there was no police duty to give Martinez a Miranda warning since he was never prosecuted and nothing he said was used against him. But the court sent the case back to the lower courts to determine if there are other constitutional grounds for a suit against the police. Supreme Court analyst Tom Goldstein explains what the legal burden for Martinez will now be.
In order to stop the case from being thrown out, they're going to have to show that the police conduct here was so outrageous that, in the Supreme Court's words, it so shocked the conscience, and that the police should have known that because of prior court decisions.
Why, you may wonder, did the High Court not answer that question?
The case turned out to be too much of a mess, it looks like. Nobody could agree with anybody else. And so sometimes they just say, oh, heck, we'll let the lower courts deal with that problem.
Indeed, yesterday's ruling was anything but clear, with the nine justices filing seven separate opinions in the case. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.